Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hello, friends.
And Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy, hoy.
Gentlemen, we have reached the final day of Shipmas.
Yes. Santa Claus has come and gone.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yes. What a strange Santa Claus this is, where you get miracles every day, but you pay. Not always pay for them. There's a lot of free stuff there, too.
Every weekday.
Yeah. So we've had, for the last 12 days, OpenAI has been announcing crazy releases left and right. Meanwhile, some of other labs. OpenAI launched Sora into general availability with Sora Turbo, which is their fast model, which anybody can just create an account and use. Google responded with VO2, which is their model, which looks incredibly capable.
How is that one spelled?
V-E-O-2. Yeah.
Okay.
And VO2, though, the thing is, it's not, you've got to go to a Google form to sign up for access to it. So it's kind of in a situation where Sora, like we'll call it Sora, like the Sora Pro, whatever model, which has yet to be released, was like 7 months ago when they announced that. I think VO looks incredible, but it's funny because people are like, look, you know, Google topped OpenAI at this release. It's like, cool, nobody can use it other than a few people allowed through the wait list, which is how the better version of Sora is still
has accessed. Been for the last, year?
Yeah, so it's a question of, I think Google's got great stuff. Their model looks fantastic. A big part of it, which was what OpenAI went through this with their advanced voice mode and then through the Sora, technically it is there. There's what they have to do for safety testing, and there's also how do you deploy it for millions of users, you know, because it's in, from what we've seen, Google did a couple announcements this week that look like really technically capable systems. They have their own chain of thought model, which we'll talk a little about in a moment. It looks like what they did is they took research versions of stuff and gave limited access to some people to use to say, look, we released it, but they don't really have an idea of what the cost or what it's going to be. They just sort of threw a ton of compute at it to be able to say, look, we did something too. And I, you know, obviously I'm biased towards OpenAI, where OpenAI, all the stuff they did release was like, yes, this is available today, with the exception of, you know, O3, which we'll talk about.
Yeah. My thought is, I'm going to focus on OpenAI for a second, and then we can get into the Google stuff. It was really cool just to see them have the interaction with the audience. It did feel like kind of a moment in time, a tech moment in time, in the same way that the Apple announcements used to really, really mean something. And when I/O first started, they used to really mean something. And then, you know, at a certain point, the king stay the king, and not every court is going to be treated with such reverence. But OpenAI is obviously a cornerstone of this industry, and for them to just show up 12 days in a row and have a little anticipation and a little buzz, I think it was good for the industry in general. And the stuff that they announced was by and large really cool. If I were to offer any note, right, and look, they got a lot of balls in the air. I think that they're going to survive without taking my advice literally. But if the event is 12 days of Shipmas, meaning we are shipping things, ending on an announcement of a thing for which people don't get to play with immediately is, you know, narratively, whatever it is. That being said, I think they will survive considering the announcement was, I think we're going to have AGI next year. So
was that really essentially the big announcement?
Yeah. So their announcement was 03. And
so I'm going to cut you off for a second. No, go ahead.
Wait.
I was asking for clarification. You were saying that the announcement was 03, Justin?
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
I 100% get what you're saying. I guess what I've said before is like, OpenAI is a research lab. They're a research lab. Their goal is research, research, research. All of the consumer stuff we see is like literally secondary to what the core thing does. And yeah, I mean, saying it's Shipmas and then, you know, a thing that you have to go sign up for. I think the thing they wanted to say was, holy cow, we built this O3 model that just beat the ARC prize. This is like an incredible state of the art kind of thing.
I agree. And look, again, I think that they're doing great. And you're right. Look, they're in an awkward phase of their research lab. The primary thing, the reason why billions of dollars are pouring into that company is not for the products that they are shipping right now. The products that they are shipping are incredibly popular and have their own audience, an audience that I very much am a part of. But the reason why billions of dollars are coming into that company are because they are on the very edge of the frontier for frontier research. And what they did today was demonstrate, wherever you think you are, rest of the planet, you better come to our little tent that is on the edge of the world, because this is how far we are. We, in 1 year, have shredded the prize that is supposed to be the marker for AGI. And now for, granted, very costly, but still possible, they now are like 87% of like the test that they have used as the gold standard. And so it's like, I think it is an extraordinarily worthy announcement. I am again offering a particularly small critique in just the name shipness. That's it.
Sure, we got fusion, but it's not Mr. Fusion.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, look, if you announce fusion in an event called, Smoothie Fest, then somebody might say, okay, but where's the smoothie?
I agree. Also, point of order,
person
I do
might
believe,
say that.
Point of order, I believe on this very program, one Andrew Main, in regards to the headlines announcing fusion, rolled his eyes and said, it's not quite practical yet, essentially saying, but it's not Mr. Fusion.
No, I don't understand. I mean, my point is like O3 is a model that's real. It exists. O3 is a model that we've now been independently testing. And now we see the big thing. So for background is there was a prize. There was a thing called the ARC prize, which was come up back in 2019 by Francis Shalette. And what it is, it's a number of kind of very challenging sort of visual puzzles. Like it might have a pixel with 3 pixels next to it and whatever. And humans are pretty good at picking up the pattern of this. AI has been just terrible at it. Like AI has not been very good at doing this. And I'll give you an example of what the scores have been. What they do is you can try to test it. And then if you think you're scoring high, you can then they have a holdout set of test questions you can test on. So you're not training on the actual answers. You're just training on understanding how to solve the problem set. And OpenAI was also very explicit. Like they didn't even try to engineer O3 specifically to solve this. It was just, oh yeah, it turns out it solved this. Like, give you an example. In 2019, when they came out with the ARC prize, GPT-2 scored 0%. In 2020, GPT-3 scored 0%. In 2023, GPT-4 scored 2%. Okay, I got 2% of the questions right. Now, a human can get something like 74, 75% when they give it to Mechanical Turk people. That's the understanding. So this is how far below, humans or AI was scoring. 2024 to GPT-4o, now we're at 5%. So now we've doubled it. Same year, this year, O1 preview did 21%. Okay, then they did O1 high, which is a model where O1's kind of using a bunch of, tokens, did 32%. O1 Pro, which now anybody with a Pro account has access to, does 50%. Then O3, which is their newest model, which turned low, which means it's not spending too much time solving it, got 76%, which, by the way, Brian, on the graph you can see there where it shows it compares it to like Mechanical Turk, this is like that's now scoring at human level. O3 tuned high, which means they let the model think for a long time to come up with an answer. And again, that is very compute expensive. Like literally, it could be $1,000 worth of tokens, who knows? And it scored 87%.
And is there an easy one sentence way to describe the test? I know you mentioned something about pixels.
Visual problem solving.
Okay.
Like finding, yeah, it's like that. It's like that, when you take the IQ test and they show you the patterns, what does this pattern have to do this pattern, et cetera.
Got it. So you have to intuit context. You have to, maybe shape rotation and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And the we're running into this point now where all of the things that we can eval for, we're finding these models are coming pretty close to it. They do other ones too. They have models like Software Code Bench and like the big code testing ones. And O3 is scoring 99% on it. It's like, it's better than like most elite programmers are. Now, we've talked about this before. There's a jagged edge. Does that mean that if I give it, you know, 300 emails, it's going to give me an accurate answer about something? Does that mean if I ask it a really complex question with some tricks in there that it'll solve it? Maybe not. The question that has been, there have been people who've said, yes, we think there's this fundamental limit to the way these models have reasoned. We've talked about that before. We've had a couple tests that have come out. And, you know, I've demonstrated prompting. I'm like, that's not a problem of how the models reason. It's a problem of how the models see the questions. You know, and the models know that these could be trick questions. When they know they can do, you know, provide different answers, they score really high. I would say to my satisfaction, we're at a, and I'll explain kind of how like O3 works is, imagine you ask GPT-4 a problem, right? What a model like an O1 or O3 does is it takes the problem and it first says, let me break it down into the steps that I need to solve the problem, right? So it breaks it down into this. If you said, you know, explain to me, you know, what's important, you know, what are the pattern between these two symbols, whatever. Step one, it's going to say, okay, I need to represent each one of these in a way that I can then try to find a pattern. Okay. Then step two is going to be, I need to compare them and hypothesize, you know, what would a satisfactory answer be? Three, I need to compare it. If I don't have a good answer, then go back to step one or step two and try this again and do kind of what we call like a tree search. Versus GPT-4o, which just sort of tries to just get the gestalt of it and answer it, where an O model does is it goes through, it says, nah, that's not quite right. Let me go try again. Oh, that's better. Or let me try a couple different things, a hypothesis, et cetera. And it's a systemic way of thinking. It's basically taking a smart model and applying it to a systems level thinking. And it means that it can go back and try again, like, no, I'm not happy with that answer. Let me do this again. And because it's able to do that, it does use a ton of compute. But if you can do that, you kind of have systems that if it can understand the problem you're posing and it can measure a way if it has a solution or not, you basically have a model that can kind of solve any kind of solvable problem.
So, so where do we aim the laser beam first, do you think, as humans?
Well, what's going to happen right now is they have a form you can fill in to sign up to do testing. The plan is to roll O3 out to everyone in into January. That is the plan. You know, OpenAI will tell you they're, you know, plans often get derailed by, you know, compute and other realities. But, you know, and it's funny because like, oh, you know, there was a headline at TechCrunch like, oh, but it's, you know, they've announced it, but it's, you know, not available. It's like true, but not true. And that like, you know, their plan is to have available in 5 weeks. And also, you know, VO2 is not really released in the same way. But I'm neither here nor there. Point is that the goal is within maybe 5 or 6 weeks, everybody else will have access to it. It's going to be very good at coding. It'll be very, very, very good at coding because those are the ones they have the evals for. You know, I talked to my friends at OpenAI. You know, one of the things that we're looking at is how do you evaluate it for every other task? And that's going to become the next big phase. Next year is going to be about how do we measure these things? Because we know they're very bad in certain areas, but once you have a way to evaluate it and an automated way to test it, they tend to get better.
Yeah. Well, I guess when I was asking, I meant like society, human society. To what task do I guess? But your answer.
Well, I mean, that was my answer, though, was the coding. Like we know that it's great at coding. And that the question is to all the other things you said about human society. Like, yeah, we have to know where it fails at. And that's where that comes into play.
I mean, the evals that they showed today during the announcement were the ARC one was the big kind of, you know, put your meat on the table kind of moment. But the hard math problems, like complex math, like the reasoning was just insane compared to anything else that we've seen. And so the dawning of O3, I think, begins what will be, I think, truly kind of like the first year of AI being not a speculative thing, not a fringe thing, not a, but maybe can it be thing. It will just be an AI year, the likes of which we have never seen before. And we will probably never yet again see anything like the one that we have just, that we are just wrapping up. Like the, if O3 is where OpenAI starts and you see the progress that they've made and you have an assumption that GPT-5 or whatever they're going to call it is, you know, lurking somewhere, the beginnings of that Jaws theme is low in the background, indicating that it might be here soon. Like, we're going to see an escalation, and maybe also, and let me again give credit to Google and Anthropic, they've continued to give chase, and these smaller models, these open source models, have continued to give chase. We're just going to be in a level of inevitability to the point where I think a lot of the arguments that have dominated the conversation, maybe not dominated, have been larger than I want them to be, because I think they're dumb, are just going to go away. The like, but is it good? And what are we, you know, but is it going to work? Is this the low hanging fruit? Have we hit a wall? No, we haven't. It's to the moon, baby. To the moon.
Yeah, it's so like, and to expand upon your question, Brian, of what that means to everybody else, is that I spend most of my day coding, and for a hobby, probably an addiction, whatever, but I like to build stuff, and it's so much easier to build stuff. But I also build stuff I use, like my dictation software I use to write my books. I built it in a couple of days using these tools. We saw with Bolt.new, the program I showed you, like you can actually now connect that with a thing called Supabase to have a database and have a login. There's a lot of great stuff that means average people with really good ideas or really good problems they want to solve are going to have tools that will allow them to do it. Right now, the problem we're in is a bunch of weirdos who are super, super smart and code all day and are very mathic are building tools for a bunch of weirdos who are coding all day and very mathic. And now
finally a way to organize my hentai.
Oh yeah. My favorite was one of the shit miss things is one of the guys, developers, he goes and he plugs in. There's a thing called Vim, which is like, you know, coding environment, like a text-based thing. It's like very, very like, you know, somebody's like legit serious. When I said, I'm going to connect it to my Vim. I'm like, bro, like this is not a general audience. You know, they're kids watching this. Hey, you're going to see those tools come to normal people. And I see this, like, I'm a big fan of Notion. I think Notion's got really good AI integration into it. I'm seeing that happen in other tools that are putting AI integration in there with O1 models. It means you're going to go from, you know, and again, there's Google has their answer to it. Meta has theirs. There's an open source stuff. There's going to be this race to sort of continue this sort of path and put these into everywhere and make them more efficient. And for us, you know, for the rest of us, it's you're OpenAI telecast this, like, you know, Sam, there are certain things that slipped throughout shipments, which if you're paying attention, you know, one is you can now use video mode on your iPhone, right? You can go into advanced mode and you can turn on that and it can see your screen and apps will let you share your screen. Which means that basically I can let ChatGPT see everything I do and help me and give me advice. You can theoretically should be able to do the same thing in the Mac app. And Google has a version of this, by the way. Google, in their version, their demo version, you can share your entire screen. Well, it's not that big of a step to go to, you know, another thing, which is, I don't know if you've noticed this. Do any of you have ChatGPT in front of you?
I do.
Click on the icon for that lets you share other apps. It's next to the plus. Yep. What apps do you see there?
Right now, I see Notion and TextEdit.
Okay.
When I am sharing.
Yeah, I don't have Notion yet, but I think there's a
this is on desktop or the app?
Desktop.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I've got, there we go, view tools. It says picture, search, reason, canvas on here.
So next to the plus sign, you should see works with, which is in beta.
I don't see a plus on here.
Where do you, where's your interface? Are you on the, you're on Windows, right? Oh, yeah. That might be it. Never mind.
Does it do something different for on PC?
Well, what it does is, yeah, they roll out the stuff on Mac first and then it comes to PC. So
it's wild. I wouldn't have thought in a browser that would matter.
No. Desktop.
Oh, it's, man. Is it worth getting the desktop app? I guess so.
So yes, it is. So dig this. I just did this right now. So on Notion, I just enabled it with Notion. And I have my prep sheet for yesterday's PX3. As soon as I enabled it, I just said, write a bullet point summary for it. And then I just said the name of the page, Thursday, 12, 19, 24. Write a bullet point summary for 12, 13, 12, 19, 24. And it did it exactly right there. My top stories, intro, outro. I can just dump gigantic piles of stuff into Notion and then have ChatGPT do the summary if I want. Now, Notion has tools for that too, but you can never go wrong having more ways to summarize a bunch of data and output it in the way that I want. But there's something that I am finding, you know, look, we were talking before about the idea of creating a crap ton of content. What I am finding is that I have a lot of time in my current life where I don't have, I have things in my hands, specifically a bottle and a baby, for which I cannot do a lot of things unless it's just watching or talking. So I did this with advanced voice mode today. I had an idea for a column or a segment, whatever. And I just had a conversation with advanced voice mode. I just said, ask me questions about this idea. Now it knew enough about what I was generally talking about that it could ask me general questions and I could just dump all my thoughts into it. It was not great at summarizing it into an actual like blog post, but I could probably ask it to put it into bullet points that I could then write, or bullet points that I could then have it expand upon in a more substantive way. But you know, these are the building blocks that when you snap the right four together, you find out you get infinite coins. This is the real stuff right here.
Yeah, I logged back in and out of Notion. Another one that's in there, do you see Script Editor?
I see inactive apps. Yes, yeah. I see Script Editor, Notes, and Terminal. Okay.
Script Editor and Mac is what lets you create your own Automator scripts. So if you want to create, so I have a number of these that I use that I can right click on my mouse, like when I'm writing a book to summarize, to go to OpenAI to summarize stuff, to create characters and stuff. So basically your ChatGPT can write scripts that can run in the background on your computer. And if you think about to build an interface that lets you basically have ChatGPT control your desktop and run apps and do stuff agentically, is there. All of the parts are there. It's just literally a matter of them taking the engineering team to say, go put this together. I'd say what makes OpenAI in a really good spot is, generally speaking, I know if I want to do a thing with ChatGPT, I open up the ChatGPT app on my computer or my phone. Yeah. Google has a lot of cool stuff. I don't know where these things are. I don't know how well they tie together. And they sometimes release stuff that is amazing. And then they'll also have something somewhere else that you're like, it's very meh. I'm not going to say that, you know, this is always going to be the state of things, but say that that's kind of the cool spot that OpenAI is in right now, is that I know my app to go into is ChatGPT.
So, question, and I understand all of the security reasons why it wouldn't be available just yet, but how far off do you think we are from being able to just download files on request from ChatGPT? For example, here, I'll share this. For this series of videos I'm doing, I need an astonishing number of coin flip results in large data sets. But the problem I'm encountering is that it can only display comma separated values. Like for the data set, it limits me to 25 trials at a time. And so I spent ironically a tedious like 2 hours simply saying, run it again for 1 to 25, run it again for 26 to 50.
Can I give you a tip here?
Yeah, please.
Go click on pro mode, click to GPT-4.0.
So I'm worried, by the way, I'm worried about corrupting this thread because I got promo to a very cool place where it understands things. Should I have any hesitation about switching at this point?
I would say,
I wish I could spawn a new instance.
I mean, you can click share chat to like grab like that a URL from where it is.
Okay. So, and where do I share chat again? I haven't.
Go on the
top right.
Yeah.
Go. Or okay. On the.
Okay. And it's taking his time here, but yep.
Okay. Because what I'm going to have you do is, so right now, Brian's got a bunch of outputs from ChatGPT 01 Pro mode. And the problem is 01 Pro has some tools, but not other tools. And so what I'm going to tell you to do is we're going to go into ChatGPT 4.0, which has access to other kinds of tool use, and tell it, hey, can you create this as a downloadable CSV? What did you want to do with the file, the data?
Oh, I just wanted, let's see. Can you put together the data? I guess I have to tell it which data. The 10 players data in one CSV. For me to download. And I guess I can always go back in time and switch the model again.
You can go back up there, I think, as long as.
I have noticed that the different flavors give wildly different answers, which is interesting.
Yeah. Eventually you're just going to ask ChatGPT and it'll just figure it out for you which model to use and what to do and get rid of like sort of the idea of what choice I have to do. So what's neat is that if you look at how simple the natural language you just given this model to do, like I code like.
So it doesn't, if you have the individual data sets, please provide them interesting.
Was it previously in the thread there?
Yeah, it's all right here. It
just say, can you grab that? Just say, can you grab this data from the thread? See if you can see it.
Can you grab that data from the thread?
Yeah. What did it? Yeah. So right now we're just, you know, welcome to ChatGPT things.
Yeah, why? Wait, welcome watching computers analyze things.
You know, and one of the things too, it's like we're only 2 years into ChatGPT and figuring out all the crazy things we want to do to it with it. And as the models get incredibly more capable, trying to figure out like what's the smartest way to go about doing this problem. So I'm always curious too, like if anybody out there has a thing you think it should do, but it can't do it, hit me on Twitter, hit me at Andrew Main. I'm really, really curious to know what problems you run into, because I think that there's a lot of variability out there as far as, you know, what the models can do. And sometimes some things are just too hard to do it, but sometimes these things are actually not terribly difficult. Did it give it?
Yeah, let's find out. We'll go to
and also that the coin flip outcome, that should be a ChatGPT 4.0 task. It should be able to do that. You should be able to just say, can you write a script that can do this? And you could actually ask ChatGPT 4.0 or just 01 Pro, say, can you write me a Python script that I can run locally that will just generate this data?
Well, for context, there's a coin flipping game that it had to learn the rules for, and there's two different ways to play the game. There's a libertarian versus communist condition. And so I got it to a point where it knows the difference between run 100 simulations for 100 symphonies under communism versus libertarianism, and then it would come up with cumulative data. And it's like, now do it for 20 solo folk singers, and then independently it knows enough of the rules to do all that stuff.
Very cool.
But like so at that point, so here, let me get to here, let me do this. And
so while you do that, I encourage everybody out here, though, by the way, to play with everything. Like, you know, go use Google's products, AI Studio, Gemini, whatever. Try that. I have a Gemini subscription too. It's $20 a month, and you know, it wants to be everywhere inside of my Gmail and stuff. I haven't found it like super useful yet, but it's a good bet that like if you're just a Google fan, whatever, a lot of what OpenAI does will be a fast follow, and Google's got very, very good versions of their own things.
Okay. So it did give me a file, but it looks like it only did it for 3 players and 25 trials. So I guess I could chat with it again.
Yeah, tell it. I want you to run this thing again, but generate like as much data. Whatever.
Well, and so the problem was, even in pro mode, it came up with impossible results in the very first line. And I had to chastise it to actually run the Monte Carlo simulation before it would do it. Like per the rules, the first results can only be 6,000 or 15,000. But it was coming up with 9,000, and I understand what it was doing. It was intuiting the probabilistic eventual outcomes averages, blah, 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 blah. But it was basically taking a whole bunch of 15s and 6s and averaging them out to 9. And it's like, well, that means you're not actually flipping the coin and generating clean synthetic data.
We're in that. I've never done this problem before. I'm going to do it my way. And you're like, no, you have to do it this way.
Yeah. Yeah. But at any rate, that the pro tip that I could take away for sure is engines, models.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If you get into a thing where, let's say, O1 Pro does a thing for you, and then you're like, I want to do this, I don't have this feature. Well, you just switch the model.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, you can switch into supporting us mode by going to patreon.com/weirdthings. Patreon.com/weirdthings ensures that you get access to every episode that we do as fast as we possibly do it, as well as the bonus content that we do. Friends, we love you. And we love people who give us money even more. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
So it won't let me go back to pro mode now. That's interesting.
Oh yeah. I'm sorry. I should have tried to make it clear. It will. Can you go back from the shared one?
It wouldn't share it because it said it already shared it before. That's bad. That's real bad.
You can copy, paste the whole thing, go back into pro and say, can you recreate this? I'll walk you through. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. This is a lot. Okay. All right. We'll get to that. I just deleted my homework assignment.
No. It's all there, Brian. It's all there. See, again, like you can literally copy the exchanges you had before, and you can go into export that, go into O1 and say, I need you to recreate this. It'll do it.
Okay.
You're talking to somebody who is like on a daily basis going, oh no, what do they do? When I code, I use a thing in Cursor. I use what they call like their agent mode, which is great because I'll just say like, hey, create this for me. It'll create the file folders or create everything. It'll do this. And the joke is, which is unfortunately very true, is that you have a really functioning great app and you're like, move the button to the other side of the screen.
And everything breaks.
It'll be like, yeah, I did it. And then you go look, it says, insert code here. It'll rip out all the other code. And you're like, I just wanted to move a goddamn button.
I spent about an hour and a half carefully coaxing advanced voice mode into doing a very good Matt Berry impression. And I locked it in. And then all I did was ask it to sprinkle faux expletives in there, and it did it at the expense of remembering what accent to use. So now it's like I got a Spanish Matt Berry, I got a Australian Matt Berry, I got a Italian one.
I think that we're at this weird phase that I think that we're going to a year or two now kind of forget like how derpy some of these things are, because these things are being built very fast. But what's going to happen is two kind of big developments. Like, one is these systems are getting better at testing themselves. And so, you know, OpenAI is using AI to help build the next generation models. So are other companies doing that? You know, Sam made a joke on the live stream today about how, like, hey, we should ask O3 to help improve itself, like literally. Yeah. And you're going to be able to do that. But you're also going to be able to say, like, hey, I want you to pretend you're Brian Brushwood and do all the Brian things it's going to do. Find out where the failure points are. And models will get better. They're going to get better at a faster rate than we realize. We want to think that we've hit this sort of technical wall, but like, we're really like, the thing that I'm like is, we're at like functional electricity. And yeah. It's not like our utility for electricity has hit a wall. Utility for electricity never hit a wall. We invent stupid stuff every day to do with electricity. That's going to happen with AI. And we're going to keep going through these rapid advancements. So I'm excited, terrified, but it's kind of awesome. So I think the next big thing you're going to see, though, is going to be when systems like ChatGPT, you just tell it what you wanted to do on your computer or what you wanted to do, and it just does stuff. Did you see the launch, by the way, Brian, of 1-800 ChatGPT?
No, I found out about it when I went over to Justin's place. I immediately called, and the second time I called was when I really dug it. It just was like, hey, again. And I'm like, of course it would think to recognize the phone number. But while it did accurately know when Justin and Brian met each other, it didn't know who was taller.
Yeah.
That I found to be a very interesting and kind of misunderstood announcement, because it was played off by some of the more rabid product hungry elements of the internet as like, oh, whatever, it's a dumb gimmick, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I mean, they just demonstrated a protocol for all customer service. Every interaction that you would ever have via a phone with anything. Restaurants, your doctor, the grocery store, like anything that you would use as a phone. So essentially something that didn't have a great online presence or an app or something like that, or another service that you would interact with it. Now, chat, like 1-800 ChatGPT just made you understand, oh, I can now interact with this over the phone. It almost single-handedly, if deployed correctly, could revolutionize my phone as something useful again. And not just a protocol for which I talk to Andrew and Brian and my mom and occasionally my wife, because we're usually in the same room.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because they made a point of like, they have a WhatsApp availability now where you can use ChatGPT inside of WhatsApp. And that is them thinking about it. It's one of these announcements that kind of people are like, oh, okay. But it's so Sam thinking about the rest of the world. And one is, 1-800 ChatGPT is your grandma, is your grandma or other people, or it's me in the car driving now, the idea that I just call 1-800 ChatGPT and talk, every U.S. phone number gets 15 minutes free per month, regardless if you have an account or not, which is kind of awesome. The fact that, WhatsApp put inside of WhatsApp to make it available, the fact that they did this deep integration to the iOS literally is this OpenAI trying to push ChatGPT everywhere and to make sure that every person can access to it. And, what's it mean to have it on a phone number? It's like, well, if I have a kid and I don't want to trust them with an app, or whatever, but if I want to say, hey, I have a question about homework, call 1-800 ChatGPT.
Yeah. I just want to make a metaphor. I know that we are big fans of metaphors.
You know, Brian hates metaphors, Justin. You should know that.
Please indulge me. 1952 was a year that many Americans experienced central air conditioning for the first time. That is the year that Dwight Eisenhower wins the presidency. It is not super, super, super far off. It's an ancient history, right? Imagine you're living your entire life without central air conditioning. And then one day just having it, just having the ability that your house remains at a certain temperature at all times. That, I believe, is the level of difference that we are going to experience next year when these technologies are just kind of built into everything. It will just feel different. It will feel imperceptibly different, but it'll be hard for us to go back in the same way that we think about the internet, the same way that we think about smartphones. There will just be a before and an after. And I think that we should take a moment because we are literally on that precipice as we speak.
Well, there's a excellent interview on Barry Weiss's Honestly with Sam Altman. And she was asking for a context of just how big a deal AI was. And Sam brought up the fact that everybody's, reaching for what is the right metaphor. And I thought his was rather astute. He said, it should be the transistor, or what he hopes it's the transistor. Transistor, and he expounded saying that once transistors came along, they're in everything. However, there is no big transistor making money on all the transistors. It's just everything is better now and everything has transistors and we're recording this podcast because of transistors, et cetera, et cetera. Like that's what AI would be. And it did occur to me that being able to speak English and understand meaning and intent, a binary meaning and intent from a word cloud of images, metaphors, and very human things, it is essentially, you know, we've got AND gates, we've got OR gates, we've got NAND gates, and now we have a version of that for all kinds of ideas, and actions can be taken simply with regular language. I thought that was a very good metaphor from Sam.
As opposed to my bad metaphor.
Oh, no. No binary.
Shots fired. The cannons from the ocean have leveled across the sea. Brian's favorite episode of Star Trek Next Generation. So another announcement came out that wasn't OpenAI. Another company revealed a term we're going to hear more about as rolled simulators. Okay. So let's talk about Sora for a moment. Okay. There's Sora, then there's Sora Turbo, right? Sora, which was the really much hyped model we saw before that did these incredible graphics and visuals. There's been some really cool presentations leaks showing us saying doing like Lord of the Rings complex stuff. If you go to Sora.com, it don't do that. It makes very pretty videos, some fun videos and stuff. I've been doing my own, like, you know, do me an ancient Roman show for Home Shopping Network. You know, I've been doing, like, you know, give me 1970s TV, man. It's some very, very fun stuff, right? But it's simple. It's a model optimized to generate a video in 5 seconds. It's not a model that spends an hour generating video, spends 5 seconds. Google showed VO2, which we talked about before. VO2 is very capable, but VO2 takes several minutes. VO2 is basically, it's a much bigger model doing this. And we know there's a much bigger version of Sora. And I think that the optics on OpenAI of trying to explain the difference between the two has really hurt them, is I think from a perception point of view, because people are like, look, you know, it's Sora. It's not even a top five model. It's like, well, the real Sora probably is, but Sora Turbo's not. Point is, the goal of Sora, though, is the idea of to do physics simulation, to understand how the world works. Why is this important? Well, we just saw another company come out with their own physics simulator model, and it does some really interesting stuff, like showing, you know, objects falling, objects, you know, pouring liquids, et cetera, because the significance of that is the model's called Genesis, by the way, and Genesis is an open source physics model designed to be able to show you like how things behave. So what's cool about that? What has been one of the biggest holding blockers for robotics has been, I can test an AI model by clicking up, you know, Brian just did, you know, thousands of computations about a coin flip at a press of button. If I want to practice an AI robot, new term, walking across my kitchen and taking the dishes out of the dishwasher and put it in the cupboard, and I have to test that in real time, I can only do so many tests. I can only do so many generations per day. If it takes 3 minutes to do that, 4 minutes, 6 minutes to do that, my time to improve is limited by that. And so that's why there's been an effort for years to do simulations to simulate stuff. They do this for self-driving cars, et cetera. You do tons and tons of computer simulations. Then you try real-world data. The bottleneck is how good those computer simulations are. And the fact that we've had them before doesn't mean, well, we already have it. It's like, well, yeah, but a simple computer simulation can be improved upon. If it's 20x more realistic to reality, how close is to reality? If I can keep improving its relation to reality to the point that it's, as you know, almost as good at reality as reality is, then that means I've got an incredible tool for improving robotics. And so I can put all of my components, all the parts, all the motors into the simulator and say, run this through, you know, 10,000 times. Now, okay, that works. Tell my robot to do it in reality. And if it does it, then that's great. So we're going to see a very, very, very fast moving progress in robotics.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, nothing controversial there. It's just understanding, you know, did I just stutter for heaven's sakes? Man, I'm excited. it's just, we're at this crazy point. And it's like, I see it from the inside, you know, with my friends working here and then looking at like on the outside going, well, like, well, this thing doesn't work. I'm like, well, yeah, we needed to solve this problem. We actually just solved this problem. In 6 months, you're going to see this. In 6 months time, you're going to see robotics be much more smoother.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that brings us back to that existing infrastructure issue where it's like we talked about, you know, the Voyager problem where it's like, you know, you have at the end of the day, there's only one tendril of humanity's science equipment that far out. And so it's worth it to spend an inordinate amount of effort to get the most out of it. I hadn't really thought about existing robotics getting anything that can, or even stuff that can't have firmware upgraded. Like imagine, let's say you require a human operator and your whole system is based on, for sake of discussion, imagine an RC, you know, dual stick. You have to manually do it. Once the robotics get good enough, which will be in 20 minutes, you won't even bother to computerize that. You'll just physically set this inside a box with robotic fingers that can manipulate it as good as any pilot would, or certified, let's say, crane operator or something. Right now, when we think about human jobs being automated, we think about you know taking out the pilot seat and putting in just a mainframe, but soon you won't even do that. It's like, no, just put a humanoid robot in there, have it put its robot hands on the controls and go for it.
I mean I think it's gonna be all the above. I think it's gonna be the, you know, as you said, the reason a lot of people, because every time I go to a talk, there's robotics, people raise their hand and go like, why are we building humanoid robots? It's like, well, all the tools in my workshop are designed for human tools, you know, hands, you know. But if we play the game, if this is true, what else is true? If Brian on the 7-acre Schwood can get, you know, a fully autonomous AI powered robot for $10,000 and put him in a warehouse with 10 other ones, with machine tools, stuff like this, well, you could just start building fully autonomous cars that don't need humanoid robots in them too. Like you just, it gets this where we've always been historically bad at predicting what happens next. And we're always very small in our predictions. And we're also not lateral, you know, and not anybody specifically here, but maybe me, like very bad at thinking laterally what the effect of that is. But like, yeah, Brian, what would you do if you had 10 robots as smart as a person?
Immediately I would, that's interesting. First of all, if they were smart as a person, I would say, hey, I want you to construct a plan and come up with the fastest strategy for us to build that gigantic pond out back. And, then I'd go to bed and the next day I'd find out, you know, maybe they come back and they're like, you know what, for the amount of earth that you're looking to move, you know, you could call in a bulldozer, but you'd have to knock down these trees or whatever. Here's our proposal. Just buy 10 pickaxes. And we're pretty sure we can at least do initial excavation in this amount of time. And no, it's not lost on us how silly the expenditure of time and energy is, but that will get you to the shape of the pond within 17 days. Meanwhile, we had already called 23 other places and couldn't get an appointment because nobody's building anything because everybody's busy building things. Or they might come back and say, well, the fastest way would be for you to have enough money to afford so-and-so to do it. To make more money, we took a look at all of your assets. We figured out that you could leverage this. We already made several calls on your behalf and, we just licensed a deal.
Right. Hey, Netflix. Black and Decker robot. You just went outside your lane there.
If there are 10 of them and they're as smart as a person, then that may be the shortest path, you know? Now we're into a new version of the paperclip problem, I realized.
But I think on the labor side of it, because you certainly could say like, because you do think about this is like, you're not thinking if you want to solve this problem, I need tiles for my floor. You're not going to go build a kiln to go do it, right? You're not thinking I'm going to go build a kiln to go do this thing. But if you've got these robots, you might think, oh, that they're like, yeah, we could build a kiln in four, because like a lot of it's come down to materials. It's going to be electricity to materials. And if you're like, hey, I want to do this thing, and they're like, well, the Home Depot cost on these tiles is this. It's like, okay, well, I don't need this for 3 months. Can you build a kiln and just start producing tiles? Sure. You just think about things differently. You start thinking of like, I have all this super cheap labor. Thankfully, I can't think of any metaphor ever in humanity when people have ever had access to super cheap labor, which they exploited and tried to develop things locally. It'll be a very new paradigm for us.
Yes.
Such... The Romans. Yes, the Romans.
There we go. Back thank goodness.
The Romans. Sure. I think that that's going to be in it. And then, you know, there's a concept, like there was a thing called like the Fab Lab, which was a... I think Neil Gershenfeld from MIT came up with, which was the idea of like about $100,000 shop that you could have that could build just about anything you needed. And I think we're going to get down to like to the $10,000 fab lab. Your garage is basically going to become like this entirely automated factory.
Yeah, no,
that's crazy.
That tracks.
Next week, it's going to happen next week, guys.
It feels like
at that, the rate man. At which I'm posting these podcasts. Yes.
By the way, quick note. Thank you to everybody being patient. As you know, with the shakeup of robots, we actually have part of our production pipeline that involves robot-driven aspects. Ironically, most of our distribution issues have been between me and Andrew Main. So it's the humans
who keep letting
you down.
Yeah. So yeah, we have plenty of episodes. It's just that I had disabled an auto posting feature, which meant that was up to me then to go through and post them. And then I forgot to check to see what was being posted. So
That'll actually be a fun experience, like to accelerate on an already head snapping pace, even more accelerated as you listen to the news over the last couple months.
Yeah, I'm going to start publishing like a couple of these at a time. So, yeah, because we talk about this later. But anyhow, gentlemen, picks.
Yeah, man. Everybody was, we got family back home from college. Everybody's about to, be cozied up for the holidays. Bonnie's off in the doing the art bazaar. And so. The rest of the family, we have that negotiation where we're all fighting about, more of this flavor, more of that flavor of media to watch together. And then something wonderful happened. We didn't have enough time to watch a movie. So I just Googled top 100 pilots of all time. And we're scrolling down and we discovered a pilot that was good. And we realized that Callie, who just turned 12 years old, had never seen it. And so we put it on just to show her the pilot. And before you knew it, we're almost done with season one of The Good Place. And it's a lot of fun to take a revisit. But what's fascinating is Penny watched it before she went to college. And now she's got a minor in philosophy. And so she's seeing it with brand new eyes. And there was one moment that Chidi Onagane said, some long discursive sentence. And then Penny goes, I was able to parse that. It was, it's a lot of fun. It's a great show.
Have you read Michael Shore's book?
No, let me add that one to the list immediately.
The showrunner, Michael Shore, wrote a book on philosophy that was inspired by him writing The Good Place.
Yeah. S-C-H-U-R, How to Be Perfect. I am buying it right now. Done. The correct answer to every moral question. Great. That's awesome.
I would like to, I started this book, but I assume it is fantastic. It is called We Have Never Been Woke by Musa Algarbi. If the title, puts you in a certain kind of excited or defensive mindset, I will caution you that it is far more of a sociological study of what was referred to as the Great Awakening of the last 10 years, taken from a pretty academic perspective. So if you want a more serious kind of studying on it, not necessarily a hot take fest, then I would greatly encourage you to do it. I think Musa's a tremendous researcher and writer, and even in the first 1/5 of this book that I am through right now, it is phenomenal. It is just really, really great work and dives into not only other times in history that we have seen similar phenomenon, but he traces it back to the same thing that tends to happen over and over and over again preceding it, which is that you have more people that have been trained and are therefore expecting elite positions in society than we have positions for those. And so what happens? Well, you get a lot of people that are angry and want to change the world. And that is the premise, elite overproduction. It is a great read so far. I would very much encourage both of my co-hosts to read it.
Yeah, I'm halfway through it now. I got distracted, and you're right. It is. It was primarily, by his own admission, written as an academic paper that kind of turned into a book. So it does read as it's not intended to be super for the masses. But what was the phrase, the production that elites make, like the idea economy? Is that what he said?
Knowledge workers or symbolic capitalists.
Symbolic capitalists. That's what it was. Yeah.
Correct. Which is not, I think Moose is great. He's on the podcast this week. He's on the episode that just came out today. He's a great dude, but some of his nomenclature, I think, is a little bit more academic than it is pop sensible.
I also noticed that.
Yeah. Symbolic capitalist does not mean that you are demonstrating, or it really doesn't have anything to do with capitalism per se. It is just that you make your living defining the symbols that define the world. And so therefore you are very, very invested in conversations and discourses and the shapings of it. And you tend to find more than people who are not in that field, that these things are very important and therefore need to be fought about endlessly. That's what a symbolic capitalist is, that you find symbols to be your capital and not necessarily that you are some kind of ostentatious person for whom loves Friedrich Hayek or something like that.
What We Do in the Shadows.
No, it's over.
Watch the 11th episode of the season. They did an 11 episode season this time. I've actually started going back and rewatching the show from the beginning. It is just, I love the show. Absolutely, absolutely love the show. Just great. No notes.
Yep.
Phenomenal. Agreed.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.